Good morning, everybody. So we have a nice sunny day, bright little Zendo. I'm assuming anybody who isn't here is out in the bright sunny day or on Zoom land, so we'll go with that. So, what are we doing here? There's a little bit more.
Look at them instead of.
Yeah, instead
of yourself.
Me. Yeah. And I kind of know what I look like, you know, so give or take. Oh, yeah, lots of people. Great. Okay. So, I guess just a little precursor. Acknowledge the times. I think a few of us breathe a little bit easier the last couple of days, you know, but we have other new challenges that have arisen. But I have to admit, I'm taking CNN in small doses, like little tiny doses. But they did actually, somebody said something pretty interesting. They were talking about the othering and not making each other enemies and things. This is obviously in the States, and reviewing commonalities, but responding to not the differences, but responding to fears. And I thought, yeah, that was really profound coming out of a news network. But that was, you know, that made the most, yeah, that's the issue. If, you know, each one's holding fear of, you know, and trying to frantically convince the other. But collectively, it's, they've covered all the bases. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that everything continues okay. Of course, we've got our COVID surging on, but that's actually not really unexpected, so we just have to kind of stay the course and listen to Bonnie and do what we're told, so that should go well, hopefully, but I don't know about triple masking. That could be a little extra challenge, but if that's what she says to do, that's what we'll do. Little PSA in there. So, and the other reason why we're so happy is because this is the last of my big talks. Yay! So that might, maybe you're not so, you should be joining me in my happiness. Right? You know, it's not that it was brutal, but, you know, like, oh, so glad to see the back end of it. Let's just put it that way. So, on that. So yeah, just on that part of it. So we've gone through the... We've been working our way through the paramitas of the Bodhisattva. So we've done 1-5, generosity, ethics, patience, vigor, meditation, and now we're at wisdom. And I've been quite fortunate in having the teachers lead the way a little bit, so I can scramble and take little notes and see how they've... kind of done the first tilling of the field. So Michael did bring forth a lot more of the abstract concepts of wisdom, difficulty or the challenges of the etymology about wisdom versus knowledge. And I know while we were talking about that, it was sort of kind of reminded me of that analogy of, you know, the more you know, the less you know kind of stuff, you know, that... But the key things on wisdom and the notion of full seeing and how wisdom and compassion are wings. And he took us through some of our more, adventuresome bodhisattvas, Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri, Samatthahadra. Ones we hear, and the concept of emptiness. So thank you, Michael, for the emptiness part, because that's covered as far as, and that's probably the most esoteric. So there is differences here on where wisdom sits in relationship with some of the other paramitas as far as the most important, the second most important, like there's a few little discrepancies there, but we certainly know that without understanding, and this is Norman including, nothing in the bodhisattva life holds up. Meditation and understanding go together. Or like Aiken says, it's the raison d'etre of the Buddha way, the most important reason or purpose for someone or someone's existence. If dana is the entry, generosity, prajna is its realization. And all the other paramitas are prajna in alternate forms, considered to be the highest and most exalted bodhisattva of the virtues. And it's the one, sort of on the raison d'etre, it's the one that brings the rest to fruition. This is where I'm talking about which ones, you know, is it 1 to 3 on considered ordinary levels of understanding? So there's a contradiction in the literature, you know, where 1 to 5 are considered ordinary levels of understanding, which anybody can practice. So you can take which one as you feel sits with you, but I think we could probably agree they're all pretty important. But that they're all nurtured to the level of perfection when wisdom is applied. Wisdom is said to encompass the other 5 perfections. And I've been talking about the analogy of a wheel and the different spokes, and that maybe the wheel's reconfigured slightly differently, and that maybe the first 5 are spokes and the rim holds it together is wisdom. It could be another way of looking at it. There's lots of ways of looking at this. So. What did seem to become apparent, though, that understanding the concept of wisdom, to me, is kind of like grasping water. It's hard to pin down. And then you have people like Norman says, no one can have understanding. It's not like you can go and buy it or something like that. It arises. But we can't. It's elusive. Dale Wright talks about another factor making wisdom particularly hard to envision is that it's not a rule-governed capacity, in that the wise are not wise by virtue of adherence to a set of ideal precepts or even rules about wisdom or about life, or that rules are rendered useless in making wise decisions. Rather, its wisdom is what we call upon to decide which rules to bring forth, at what time, and how to apply them. And in this, there are no rules to follow. So then we go into the world of analogy and Araguna. This is analogous to the difference between cow milk and donkey milk. Although they are the same in color, if one churns cow milk, it turns into butter, whereas if one churns donkey milk, it becomes like urine. That's what I said. Ooh, so I did some research, because I said that didn't seem right, really. Like, is that true? I said, you know, so to be fair to donkeys, it's not as bad as you'd have to believe, you know, because then we saw things like Cleopatra apparently used donkey milk to reduce wrinkles. That was one of her treatment protocols. And it's apparently quite expensive to buy, you know, and people use that for digestive problems and things like that. But maybe the hint was that apparently it's pretty low in fat compared to cow's milk, so maybe it just doesn't turn out as well. Maybe. I don't know. Or I could default to maybe it's just a translation issue. I have no idea, you know. So, but that's what was in there. So I could bring the text and Kate and Michael could have a look at that, you know, and see what it actually said. So, but, it, you know, that's kind of true. You know, just because it works in one situation doesn't mean it's going to work in the other. Diane Rossetto talks about wisdom being more like ongoing moving life force that runs through and transforms everything from humans to animals to plants. Michael talked about that a bit with looking out at the trees and the communications of the trees and our communication and that lack of boundary. And she goes on that wisdom, deeper intelligence, draws in creative forces, and true reality is beyond names, but it's rising and falling and ungraspable. So the ultimate understanding, in a way, is intuits the emptiness of all phenomena and recognizes the primacy of the imagination. That's Dorman. Although wisdom is understood more in terms of a certain behavior, comportment, a way of being, ideas, I'm putting in also known as imagination, become the essential starting point. So we look at the Heart Sutra, which is the most compact version of the Wisdom Sutra, and it's put up as an example of this is how you should view things. The view itself does not necessarily make you wise, but it will get you there. And what's this view? It's the principle of emptiness, or sunyatara. So I got thinking about this, and I thought, well, if we're not going to talk about emptiness, well, we could, and then this talk would be over, because nothing to talk about. And certainly, you know, we'll look at... And then when you have things like Norman saying there's no way to practice the perfection of understanding, there's no techniques, no instructions, no tricks. Talks about looking at the Heart Sutra and saying things that you look at that. There's no way not to practice the perfection of understanding if you're looking at that. But if you're standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, if you're alive in the present moment with the body and consciousness, a perfect understanding is there. And he says, remember this in bold letters right across. But there is one term that sticks out, is that if you can't get it per se, you can't, you know, it's not something to own or have. But the one key to me was that it requires cultivation and special cultivation. And that's how I kind of envision on the whole, first you have to access knowledge and information, cultivate, and what kinds of knowledge and information are you going to bring in that's going to help support you on this practice of wisdom. And of course, given my theme so far, kind of looked at it on the mind and on the body. So we went back to Vasubandhu. And, of course, we have all our big, long lists. But it does talk about different things to be kept in mind. So there was the 10 dharmas of skillful contemplation, exclusive to bodhisattvas. And in those 10, there was lots of talk about non-existence and emptiness and understanding that. There was also the 12-fold skillful entry of Dharma gateways. And so there was a lot of, you know, skillfully enters but does not give up. For example, renunciation of bliss associated with desire and yet does not renounce Dharma bliss. So there's a lot of that. That's too advanced for me. And then there's the 20 types of mind key to a bodhisattva's wisdom's realization. 20. I didn't pick all 20, but these were sort of the things that I thought were a little bit more graspable. So things like, with wholesome motivation, seeks to personally draw close to the good spiritual guide. Doesn't say what, I'm assuming Buddha, bodhisattvas, good teachers, draw forth. Complies with teaching and delights in listening to the Dharma. Remains insatiable in listening to the Dharma, while also skillfully contemplating its meaning. I laugh, and then listens to teachings on the paramitas and remains mindful and zealous in cultivating them. Other contemplations include impermanence, suffering, non-self, quiescent cessation, emptiness, signlessness, wishlessness, effortlessness. talks about contemplating abundant faults and vulnerabilities to misfortune, and which conquers and subdues afflictions, and recognizes that they are not one's friends. That was, guards all good dharmas and recognizes they are one's friends, suppresses and controls bad dharmas and causes them to be cut off, cultivates right dharma, causes it to increase and become widespread, and upholds the genuine practice and seeks out all dharmas of the Buddha. So that's not a bad curriculum, you know, that sort of gets us started a little bit, you know, on that. And then we go into other ways of accessing knowledge in the body. I'm saying here there's some clues in the Heart Sutra, five aggregates, and I'm not the only one that's noticed that, but on the five aggregates on form, sensation, perception, formations, and consciousness. And that, through that, we're not accessing through words, but we're finding the language that the body speaks. A way of looking at what constitutes our experience of each moment would be things like form. This is the material form of an experience that comes to us through our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, mind, thinking. This is Diane, where she's sort of talking about like our first impulse, like when we see a shadow in the path. Is that a stick or a snake? The information coming in. Then sensations. We didn't talk about that. I didn't talk about this, but you know that people have heard that about, you know, a little bit of the labeling, pleasant, unpleasant, pleasant, neutral. She talks about the flavor that comes with that form. Then our perceptions that follow. We're knowing we're having an experience. We have some awareness of it. I am experience and I believe it to be true because I'm experiencing it. So there's this knee-jerk reaction. And then we make mental formations. Our reactions, what are we going to do? Are we going to jump? Are we going to yell? And then consciousness takes the previous form, four, and combines them into our recursive whole. I'm having this experience, and because I'm having this experience, I'm a self. Consciousness includes everything from the most fundamental input we have from our senses to feelings and thoughts that we have about these perceptions, including distant past memories and associations. So the key part of this, of course, is that most of this happens in nanoseconds, and they're constantly weaving and interweaving. But we do find that they're empty, that they have no enduring life, but rise in a moment and then fall in a moment. So this beginning of some of our understanding. Some other writers. We cannot cut through this chain of reactions if we're not mindful of our sensations. If we just pay attention to passing thoughts, deep inside, a part of the mind keeps reacting. Because with thought, there's also sensation. You must not miss this root. Being mindful of sensations does not mean standing apart and observing like a distant witness. Rather, we're directly in experiencing what is happening in our body. Train to the experience, the body from the inside out. Or another way, to be embodied is to be in connection with everything. To be in the body is to know sense perceptions as openings out into the sacred world, is to feel our connectedness with other people as subjects, and to know that the nature world, earth, ocean, rivers, mountains, and whom we are in deep relation. We're not above the world, but embedded in the world. We've got... I'm stalling here. Still feels a little like, okay, I hear you. but it's still, accessible. So I looked and found more stories and analogies that I think sometimes help, and then one or two of these might land a little better than others, but it helps. I find it helps a little bit more with trying to get a sense. So Aiken tells a story and talks about we can find acknowledgement in the philosophies and psychological implications of prajna, but there's more to it than that. He remembers a Zen Buddhist friend when he was young speaking about prajna. The songs of birds is prajna, the sound of the wind is prajna. He says, I didn't understand it didn't make sense, but as my father used to say when I found something that had been there all along, if it had been a bear, it would have bitten you. Old teachers used a snake metaphor instead. Shui Fang said to assembly, on this south mountain there is a turtle-nosed snake. You should all watch out for it. And then there's some dialogue about what does that mean, and some of the saying, they point out that lots of people have been bitten to death, so why, and then just why just the south mountain? And then there's, but the other analogy, but the grass is so deep we can't find it. And he's saying that's the problem. Our delusions and preoccupations obscure the living fact. And then Michael, who I'm not sure, he did, I'm just clarifying, he's not one of the old teachers. It just fell in the section. Talked about picking up wisdom as knowing which end of the snake to pick up. So, another snake. Another analogy, it's kind of like we talked about in meditation. This is analogous to a case where one person lights a lamp in a dark room which illuminates all material objects, such that one is entirely able to distinguish between them. Then yet another lamp, another large lamp is introduced, which increases even more the clarity of the visible detail. When this happens, one realizes that the darkness dispersed by the latter lamp dwelt together in the company of the prior lamp. And although the prior lamp dwelt together with a measure of darkness, still it nonetheless is also able to illuminate things. Then again, if there had been no darkness with the prior lamp, then the latter lamp would have afforded no increased benefit. And then Aiken did kind of give me a little clue on another way of looking at that. That it was Hugh Ning spoke of prajna but linked it with dhanya. Listening to prajna, likening prajna to the light and dhanya to the lamp. Without the practice of settled focused meditation, realization is not possible. And without realization, the practice is dark. And another story analogy, which brought in a different concept. This is Ayakama. To find the right direction in life, we need wisdom. And the counterpart to that, according to her, is faith. Faith and wisdom need to act together. The Buddha compared faith to a blind giant who meets a small, sharp-eyed crippled called wisdom. Faith says to wisdom, I'm very strong, but I can't see where I'm going. And you are very weak, but you have very good eyes. Come and ride on my shoulders. Together we'll go far. The blind faith can move mountains, but unfortunately it doesn't know which mountain to move. Wisdom is absolutely essential to point the way, and it has the sharp eye of inner vision. Those are some other ways. And then she talks a little bit about, and then actually not many others did, but that you kind of take all this information and you process it. And she likened it to kind of digestion. I didn't feel it was like a perfect analogy, but where you're learning and chewing and swallowing and waste matter was involved and things like that. But it was still a good image, I think, to sort of how you kind of process, and maybe you find out this thing doesn't agree with you as well as maybe that thing, you know. And it was just that internalization. And then Wright gives us another bit. The wise person is more attentive to learning than knowing. I thought that was, yeah, that's probably a good one to keep in mind too. So there was a couple of things that I couldn't resist that we're talking about. Just in case you thought you were getting prajna at any point in time, and you run to a teacher to talk about it. He said, dear, when the young monk Wen Yang came to Hung Jen for the first time, he said, "May I tell your holiness that prajna frequently arises in my mind?" Hung Jen changed the subject and sent him to the backyard to hull the rice. So, and then Diane talks about, true, these moments of flashes will occur. They may be described as an experience moment when self-identity drops away and there's just open awareness beyond the mind, which separates and categorizes. Oftentimes when a person has such a moment, then try to hold on to that insight. A wise teacher will see this and offer them a chance to break through. And then her stories. I'd like to tell you about an experience of seeing clearly that I had yesterday. The teacher pointed to the door and said, "Please go wash the garbage cans in the yard. I can smell them all the way in here." So. And the lesson to that is that seeing clearly means that we first need to recognize that all we think we know is but a limited perspective, and that our perspectives are formed by an infinite array of conditions, including but not limited to the mechanisms of our own body and mind. And I'm supposing that most of the message here is that, you know, you can be tuned in, but maybe not think too much of it, I guess, at the time. I'm not really sure. I don't have many, so I don't have that discussion with my teachers very often. So, but we'll see. Just saying, you might not get the response you thought you might. So. Might even be worth keeping to yourself. I don't know. Anyhow. But I have been grappling with this sort of, and then I'm hearkening back to Michael's talk about, you know, how, you know, knowing what a wise, you know, that kind of, how do we know what it looks like, you know, the features of a wise person or a wise bodhisattva. And I did come across, and again, sometimes we move out of the texts, and this is actually Jack Kornfield in his book, Bringing Home the Dharma. And I thought what he talked about was pretty interesting, and again, a little more tangible. And so features of a wise bodhisattva included non-idealism, not perfectionist, rests in compassion for our being, not to let go and to let love. Kindness, patience, immediacy, awakening is found in the here and now. And again, like our previous, after the ecstasy, the laundry. And in the immediate presence invites us to walk our talk. It's integrated and personal, means that the spirituality does not create separate compartments of our life. And personal honors the spirituality through our own words and actions. Open-mindedness, not blind faith, open-minded questioning, don't know mind, discriminating wisdom, flexibility like the bamboo, respects changing circumstances, has learned the great arts of staying present and letting go, embracing opposites, non-duality, relatedness, always in relationship to something, always honoring community and interconnectedness. And then he cites Tao Te Ching. I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. These three are your greatest treasures. Simple in actions and thoughts, you return to the source of being. Patient with both friends and enemies, you accord with the way things are. Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world. And his last feature was ordinariness. Post-enlightenment practice. The ordinariness that arises after the special spiritual states and side effects have faded away. It allows the mystery of life to show itself. And he cites Thoreau in this category. Yeah. Beware of any activity that requires the purchase of new clothes. Simplicity and just as ourselves, you know. And I'm like, I don't know, does this work? So to close. And this is Diane Rizzotto talking about Joko Beck, her teacher, being nothing special. We are rather like whirlpools in the river of life. In flowing forward, a river or stream may hit rocks, branches, or irregularities in the ground, causing whirlpools to spring up spontaneously here and there. Water entering one whirlpool quickly passes through and rejoins the river, eventually joining another whirlpool and moving on. Though for short periods it seems to be distinguishable as a separate event, the water in the whirlpools is just the river itself. The stability of a whirlpool is only temporary. The energy of the river of life forms living things. A human being, a cat or a dog, trees and plants. Then what held the whirlpool in place itself altered, and the whirlpool is swept away, re-entering the larger pool. The energy that was a particular whirlpool fades out, and the water passes on, perhaps to be caught again and turned for a moment into another whirlpool. That probably, I thought that was a beautiful image, just an absolute beautiful image. So a little shorter. So we're going to move into my, you know, my classic second part. This is, you know, and we'll do a bit of mindfulness sense exercise. This is a little bit longer because I have the requisite poem on that. So I will invite you here in the Zendo and there out in Zoom land to get yourself comfortable, get yourself warm, put your socks on, get your blankets, and appreciate that this is not classic Zen meditation, but we're looking at this to offer a different perspective, or like I said, or just informing, finding a different access to knowledge. And that whatever we offer here on this part is optional. You can choose to participate fully or not at all. You can turn off your sound or you can turn off your screen. People in the room will just have to turn me off a little bit in their ears. But we're not asking for any deep dives. We're just looking to just take a little nibble. But what I am asking is that you consciously relax and settle a little more than what might be experienced in a usual Zazen posture, though it can be a Zazen posture. And that's to understand that if you're experiencing any sensations that are uncomfortable, just stay with what you find is comfortable. You're in charge and you can control all that is offered. Just take a few moments, find a comfortable position, find something that gives you the greatest amount of ease. Your eyes may be open or closed. You could be lying down, sitting in a chair. You have a little pillow. Just choose and give yourself permission to pick the most comfortable position possible. And as you settle and your body begins to ease, you may choose to take a cleansing type breath in and a deep breath out. Another breath in and a deep breath out. And then just as you're choosing, find a breath pattern that is calm and comfortable for you. And just take a few moments and cycles of breath in your own way. You may consider to become aware of the points of your body that are in contact with your cushion, with your seat, the soles of your feet on the floor, your back against a chair, knees touching each other, your hands in your lap or against the floor. And just notice the pressures of contact and be aware. Or if there's nothing to notice, that's fine too. And the invitation now, with an open awareness, begin a gradual and thorough experience of your body as a whole. Be as slow and thorough as you like, but be careful not to use your eyes to direct your attention. Thoughts will naturally arise. Notice them passing through and gently return your attention to your body, to your sensations. And experience your physical aliveness exactly as it is now. Open your intention to include your body in a comprehensive way. Be aware of the body's field of changing sensations as the atmosphere comes in contact with your skin or your clothing. Or maybe you sense a subtle energy field that vitalizes and gives life to every cell, every organ in your body. Is there anything in your experience that is solid, unmoving? Is there any center or boundary in the field of sensation? Simply be open to the changing dance of sensations, feeling your life from the inside out. And if no particular sensations call your attention, remain open to feeling energy simultaneously in all parts of your body. Hokusai says, look carefully. He says, pay attention, notice. He says, keep looking, stay curious. He says, there's no end to seeing. He says, look forward to getting old. He says, keep changing. You just get more who you really are. He says, get stuck, accept it. Repeat yourself as long as it's interesting. He says, keep doing what you love. He says, keep praying. He says, every one of us is a child. Every one of us is ancient. Every one of us has a body. He says every one of us is frightened. He says every one of us has to find a way to live with fear. He says everything is alive. Shells, buildings, people, fish, mountains, trees, wood is alive, water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside us. He says, live with the world inside of you. He says, it doesn't matter if you draw or write books. It doesn't matter if you saw wood or catch fish. It doesn't matter if you sit at home and stare at the ants on your veranda or the shadows of the trees and the grasses in your garden. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Contentment is life living through you. Joy is life living through you. Satisfaction and strength is life living through you. He says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Love, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you. So now, in your own time, just begin to bring your awareness back into the space. You might want to wiggle your toes, give a good stretch, deep breath in, and just gradually bring yourself back into the space and into our zendo. Wake up, Zoomland. I can turn this on.
Yeah, okay.
No, there is no homework because Norman says there's no homework. You can't learn this. So. Yeah. But I guess, you know, what would be the homework? There is no homework. It's just, you know, we're going to leave here. If one little crumb falls in and that you recall, that would be absolutely delightful. But, and that, I hope you, you know, have added this wheel onto your cart and have many things that you can use and that it'll provide the stability. I thank you for joining me on this. And those, I know I've had some pretty stalwart steadies, so I really appreciate that, you know. But I also recognize the sun's out there too, so that's fine. That's what recordings are for, so on that. And it's just been quite delightful, and then we'll be moving into our retreat, so see a little bit more, but not much more. And then that'll be end of that chapter of this book. So thank you very much. So we'll just close. May.